Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on strategic relocation when we come back. You know, once in a while we get a glimpse of the real world through the eyes of an insider like John Swinton, for instance. Swinton was the guest of honor at a banquet given to him by the leaders of his craft, and someone who knew neither the press nor John Swinton offered a toast to the independent press. Well, Swinton outraged his colleagues by replying that there was no such thing at this date of world's history in America as an independent press. You know it, and I know it. And there's not one of you who dares to write your honest opinions, and if you did, you know beforehand that it would never appear in print. Now, I'm paid weekly for keeping my honest opinions out of the paper that I'm connected with, and others of you are paid similar salaries for similar things, and any of you who would be so foolish as to write your honest opinions would be out on the streets looking for another job. And if I allowed my honest opinions to appear in one issue of my paper, before 24 hours, my occupation would be gone. Now, the business of the journalist is to destroy the truth, to lie outright, to pervert, to vilify, to fawn at the feet of mammon, and to sell his country and his race for his daily bread. You know it, and I know it. And what folly is this toasting of an independent press? We are the tools and vassals of rich men behind the scenes, he said. We are the jumping jacks. They pull the strings, and we dance. Our talents, our possibilities, and our lives are all the property of other men. We are intellectual prostitutes. Now, that was John Swinton that said that back in 1880. Well, these rich men behind the scenes are the movers and shakers of this Global 2000 program and the New World Order. They're the men and families like the Windsors and the Rockefellers, the Bushes and Bundys and Carnegies and Vanderbilts. That's why I contend that it's time that we wise up and start listening more to the God of Abraham and stop following after all these crazy scientists, philosophers, preachers, and politicians, and let's prepare to live through and survive this New World Order and this Global 2000 insanity. Now, if you'd like to learn more about Global 2000, Bible prophecy, and the New World Order, then call and order my free 4-hour compact disc package. It's educational, it's entertaining, it's informative, and best of all, it's free. And you can call right now to order one. The number to call, 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. And if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Just click on the email and send us an email request. Again, that's georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. Strategic relocation. I saw a Frontline expose on the subject of strategic relocation some time back as it relates to President Bush and the cabinet and the members of Congress. And they showed that at Camp David that the president's retreat is located at, they have an underground facility for the president in the event that there is an attack on the United States, primarily a nuclear attack by the Russians or Chinese or somebody else. And it reminded me of Hitler's bunker in Berlin, where Hitler And all of his close political associates were deep underground under the city, the capital city of Germany. And they had champagne, cigars, cigarettes, and they had hot and cold running secretaries and hot and cold running servants who were preparing their meals and doing all of the things that people have to do. But instead of being out in the country club, you know, where you're in the golf links and out at Camp David, or, you know, out here in the countryside of Bavaria, he was deep underground. So that when the incoming bombs, you know, from the strategic bombing runs of the 8th Air Force and the artillery shells from the Russians are raining down on the people of Berlin, and the average truck driver and Joe Sixpack is up on street level getting bombed and burned and killed, injured and maimed, the intelligentsia of the country are down underground, safely ensconced in their capsule, and being taken care of. And, I mean, they're not just subsistence and survival people. I mean, these people are living opulently. And so the frontline people pointed out that President Bush has the exact same thing. It's just that it's not in downtown Berlin. It's out in the countryside someplace. There is a safe space or a safe place under the White House. I don't know if you'd ever heard this before, but in the event that President Bush was there at the White House and they only had 30 minutes advance warning of incoming missiles coming into Washington, D.C., if they felt for some reason that he couldn't get out of the White House and get over to Camp David to get into the permanent shelter, that what they would do if they couldn't fly out in the helicopter, they would go underground right there at the White House. And they have the same thing there at the Capitol building with the senators and representatives. And then they pointed out that across the country that there are other safe places. For instance, governors and legislators of various states, not every state, but, you know, various states, they also have this. And I got to thinking about that as I was watching this expose. Well, these people must honest to God believe that there's a nuclear attack coming because they haven't just spent millions of dollars. They have spent multiple billions of dollars on this subsistence and survival retreat for the intelligentsia of America. I mean, the political establishment, the political elite of this country. I can't speak for the rest of you people out there. I don't know what the hell they do in France. I imagine if there's bombs coming here to the United States and Washington, D.C., that there's probably some bombs going to rain down on Paris, Stockholm, and London, as well as Berlin and other places. And I suppose that if the people who operate the intelligence services of, say, England and France and Switzerland and Sweden and Russia and China and so on, if they have intelligence services, they must know this also. I mean, do any of the Mossad or any of the Russian, you know, and Chinese spies, do they ever watch Frontline? I don't know. Maybe the PBS station here is pretty safe and secure, but it would look like to me that people who are in the know make plans to save themselves at the expense of the average Joe Sixpack. Now, while Hitler was underground in his bunker during World War II, the people of Dresden were burning to death in the firestorm. And while the people of Berlin were being bombed, the intelligentsia, the political establishment of Germany, was safely ensconced underground. Now, I always got to thinking, you know, or I have, you know, for most of my life, been thinking about subsistence and survival. I can remember the story of the Titanic when I was a kid back in the early 1950s. There was a movie came out on the Titanic, you know. And, of course, you know, when you're a young fella, you're 12, 13, 14 years old, you're highly impressionable, you know, in those formative years, you know, and you're learning things. And I was just absolutely shocked and dumbfounded that this was the safest ship in the world. And here are these people riding on the safest ship in the world, built by the little bitter, of course. And it had hit an iceberg, and it sank. It was so safe that it was unsinkable, and because it was unsinkable, they didn't have life rafts for everybody on board. In fact, the only reason they had lifeboats on the Titanic was because they felt that a ship like that needed lifeboats, at least for the purposes of showing that this was a luxury liner, and all luxury liners had lifeboats, and if this luxury liner didn't have any, it wouldn't look like a luxury liner. So they just put them on for show. And they just put on half as many. And of course, they didn't want it to take up a lot of usable space, and so they didn't put on too many. But they put on a few, you know, so it looked like it was a ship. They didn't want this thing to look bad, you know. And then, of course, you've probably heard the story of the Titanic. It's been done a couple of three times by Hollywood. You might have even read the book and, you know, know a little something about it. But, you know, it always struck me that those people were never really prepared for the event that transpired. And I often wondered, well, why not? Even the captain wasn't prepared. And the owners of the ship, they were on board. One of them was a guy by the name of Bruce Ismay, and he wasn't prepared for it either. It was a total shock. But nuclear bomb war is not a total surprise, and it's not a total shock, at least to our political intelligentsia. They're prepared for it. They're waiting for it. They know it's coming. It's almost like the war with Iran. Is there anybody out there, as of this early date in 2007, that can't see that war with Iran is now inevitable? Just like war with Iraq was inevitable. You know, unless there's something really dramatic that occurs that's totally unforeseen today as I speak, war with Iran is coming in 2007. Probably war with Syria at the same time. There's enough information that filters through the news media, and you can see it on Meet the Press, you know, or you can see it on Frontline or some of these TV shows, or you can read about it in Time or Newsweek. And my question is, well, are any of these people prepared for this? Are any of the people of Iran, do they know what's coming? Do they know what the American government has in store or has in mind for Iran? Did the people of Iraq, prior to the American invasion, did they have a clue, an inkling? Was there anything in the press, either Western or Eastern, that could have given them the idea that maybe there was a problem brewing and that maybe they needed to take action? Now, if you stop and think about natural disasters, you know, like tornadoes and hurricanes and Hurricane Katrina and so on, is there ever warnings that come prior to? I'm not talking about the warning from the National Weather Service that tells you that in 7 days Hurricane Katrina is going to reach landfall. We just don't know exactly where. But we kind of suspect that it's going to be the Gulf Coast and New Orleans. I mean, you know, even with 7 days warning, I often asked my students, I said, now, suppose you were on the Titanic. And let's suppose that you had 48 hours warning or notice that the ship was going to hit an iceberg and sink in 2 hours and 20 minutes. And I asked my students, could you save yourself with that much information? 48 hours advance notice. What would you do if you knew that was coming? You know, the Bible is filled with prophecies, advance warnings of strategic geopolitical events that are going to occur at some future date. Now, the problem with Bible prophecy is that it doesn't have a date, you know, like 2005, Hurricane Katrina is going to hit, or in 2008, then there's going to be the mark of the beast in Revelation 13:16 that will come upon you, or some other specific event. But one-third of the Bible deals with prophecy, prophetic events that are going to occur in the future. And 90% of those events are either underway today as I speak, or are yet future, something that's going to occur. For instance, the mark of the beast hasn't come yet. I don't have a mark of the beast that requires me to have it, or I can't buy, sell, or trade. I can actually buy, sell, or trade some things without even a social security number. Not a whole lot, but there's a couple of things once in a while come up. But is there any doubt in anybody's mind, living in the year 2007 in the United States of America, that there is a time coming in the near future when you're going to have a national identification card, and that you're not going to be able to go into a Walmart store and buy a pack of chewing gum unless you've got the right documentation to go along with it? Is there anybody in America that's so far out of touch with reality at this date of January 2007 can't see that coming? Because by May of 2008, we're going to have a national identification card here, kids, with an RFID chip embedded in your driver's license by May of 2008. Did you know that? I just thought I'd throw that out there. Now, what this final form is a chip that goes into your right hand and into your forehead. And if you don't have this chip in your right hand or forehead, you're not going to be able to write a check, open a checking account, go into a federal building, get on an airplane, or do the normal run-of-the-mill, everyday garden variety things that people do today. Which brings us to the subject matter of this week's program, and that is strategic relocation. Is there something that you could do to prevent this from happening to you? Is there some way that you could know in advance what's coming down, how approximately it's going to impact upon you, your family, your job, your business, and what you could or should or might do to alleviate the strains and the symptoms that come from that, like riding on the Titanic, or living in New Orleans before Hurricane Katrina, or living in a nuclear target area. Now, I don't have any inside track on nuclear war, and the Prime Minister or the Premier of Russia, Mr. Putin, does not confer with George Gordon on any kind of a regular basis and inform me as to when the Russians are planning this sneak attack, or the Chinese, or somebody else. But there is little doubt in this man's mind, this reporter's mind, that nuclear bomb war is coming to the United States of America, and probably to a city near you, wherever you live on planet Earth. And that's because of Bible prophecy. There's just a little doubt. I don't have the dates down. I don't know if it's coming this year, next year, or next decade, or 50 years from now. I can't tell you that. I don't know. But there's little doubt in my mind. And that's because George Bush and the intelligentsia of America are prepared for nuclear bomb war. And last week I reported to you that the majority, the big corporations of America and their chief executive officers and the boards of directors, these people that are in the know, are selling their stocks in their companies. Guys like Bill Gates are selling stock in Microsoft, not buying more. Warren Buffett has de-invested or disinvested himself in American dollars, as he converted to a number of other currencies. And Warren Buffett isn't buying stocks in the United States. He's buying gold and silver and other investments. And people who are in real estate, I mean the big guys in real estate, you know, like the Donald Trumps and the others, you know, that you see reported, you know, in Business Week magazine, are selling their real estate and repositioning themselves for something. And so when I read about that, I reported that to you last week. I said, hey, did you know that Bill Gates and Warren Buffett are out of dollars and they're into euros? And I got to thinking about that last week, and I said, geez, would that be good advice for a truck driver or a taxi driver or a waitress? And I thought that was pretty good advice. In other words, if people that are in the know have strategic relocation in mind, like George Bush, if George Bush is prepared to move out of Washington, D.C. because of a nuclear attack to a safe and secure blast-proof, fallout-proof shelter, wouldn't that be just as good for Sally Housewife and Joe Sixpack, the mechanic, you know, working as Mr. Goodwrench down here at the GM dealer? At least I kind of figured it probably was. And so I've been interested in that for a number of years, and we teach a school here, a class on on subsistence and survival. Well, I happened to pick up a book the other day. One of my students sent it to me. It's called Strategic Relocation. That's the very name of the book. North American Guide to Safe Places. It includes Canada, the United States, and Mexico. I can't speak for you people over in England and Ireland and Scotland and in Germany. I suppose that you've got safe locations and relocation places there. You know, the Russians and the Chinese have for at least 30 years, to my knowledge, been building underground survival locations for the populations of their major cities. Did you know that? So when I heard that the Russians were building fallout and bomb shelters in Moscow, and in the surrounding locations around Moscow, and that over years of time, they have been relocating their strategic industries around the country so that they wouldn't make as big a target. I got to thinking about that, and I said, well, they evidently are preparing for a nuclear attack by the United States, or France, or England, or somebody else that's got a bomb. And I asked myself then, I said, gee, do these people know something that I don't know? Something that I would like to know, but I haven't been informed. Now, you've probably seen some of these disaster movies, you know, like Volcano, you know, or Hurricane, or, you know, or The Towering Inferno, or something like that. And, of course, they're entertaining, and they're kind of fun to watch. And then as you're watching The Towering Inferno, you kind of ask yourself, well, gee, what would I do if I was up there in the Trade Towers? And I'm on the 105th floor, and an airplane just flew into this building, and here I am trapped up here on the top floors. Well, would I run up onto the roof and wait for a helicopter to come by and pluck me off, or would I try to put some sheets together and make an improvised parachute and jump out of the 78th floor? Or, you know, what would I do in a circumstance like that? But, you know, after the Titanic hits the iceberg is hardly the time to start preparing for swimming in the North Atlantic. And after Hurricane Katrina strikes New Orleans is hardly the time to start preparing for the hurricane. And after the airplane hits the tower is hardly the time to be thinking about and planning an escape from the building. Now, is it? Things like that should have been thought out, prepared, and planned for long prior to the event. Now, let's take a look at something that just happened here locally. I'll tell you a little story here. Where as I speak, we're in the midst of an ice storm here. This is the worst ice storm to ever strike the Ozarks region of Mid-America in history. And Springfield City Utilities, we call it CU here, but Springfield City Utilities says that it's now under 14,500 customers without power in the service area in what it now calls its largest outage ever. At its peak, the 2007 ice storm cut off 71% of the CU customers, compared to 51% in the 1987 ice storm. 1,100 workers in 300 crews are on the job, but General Manager John Twitty says that trees coming back as they thaw out, plus this weekend storm coming up, make it a week before all of the power is going to be restored. Several of the rural electric co-ops are having a tougher time of it. State Agriculture Director Fred Farrell says that some will have to essentially rebuild their systems from the ground up. That's literally after thousands of poles were snapped and both feeder and distribution lines from substations went down. Ozark and Southwest Co-ops are saying that it may be weeks before all of the services restored, and ditto for some rural Empire District electric consumers or customers. The co-ops report around 35,000 out, Empire around 25,000. Did you catch that? It may be weeks before all of the service is restored. So what they're saying is that there are some customers that may be several weeks before they have electric power. Can you live without electricity for several weeks. That's two or three. Several is more than one, so it'd be 2, 3, 4 weeks. How would you like that? And I couldn't help but ask myself, well, are any of these people that are without electric power prepared for an outage of 2 or 3 weeks? And the answer is no. No, in fact, I don't know of anybody that's prepared. And it isn't that ice storms are something new and unique, never heard of before, any more than hurricanes on the Gulf Coast are something new and unique and never heard of before. Back in 1900, a hurricane hit, I think it was Corpus Christi, Texas, and it killed about 6,000 people. And that's before FEMA. They probably did better without the federal government interfering. They rebuilt the city, put in a big wall there, and so you know, a seawall or something like that. And they haven't had that problem since. And just taking a look at New Orleans as an example over here, it wasn't something that they weren't expecting and hadn't been warned about. 20 years before Hurricane Katrina, back about 1985, 86, along in there, I happened to be in New Orleans, and I was conducting a school, and I happened to stay at this fellow's house. And when we went over to this fellow's house, it was dark, it was night, and so the next morning, I went outside, and I was standing in this man's front yard. And he lived on a cul-de-sac, and as I was standing there in his front yard, I noticed this great big earthen wall in front of me, looking ahead, and I saw this big wall, and I thought to myself, now what is this? It looks like a mountain here. And I thought this was pretty flat terrain when I drove in here, you know. I'd driven into New Orleans and Metairie. And so here I was standing here looking at this wall, and all of a sudden I saw this big thingy off to my right side, and I looked at it, and it was a ship. And I was looking up at this wall, and on top of this wall, here goes a great big ocean-going ship. Now, I can't see all of the ship. I can just see its superstructure going by. And, you know, for a kid, you know, from the plains, you know, out here in the Midwest, you know, where you just look, you know, across the plains forever. And I looked up there, and I saw this ship going by this guy's front yard behind this mountain standing in front of me. I looked at that, and I just couldn't believe my eyeballs. I didn't know what I was looking at, and I couldn't understand, you know, having seen this for the first time in my life, what on earth am I looking at here? I can see this thing going by. I can see this mountain in front of me. I can see the trees, and I can see the yard. I can see the houses. How in the hell do you put into your mind something as bizarre as standing in a front yard watching a ship go by over your head? Well, the man came out, and he walked up to me, and he said, good morning, and how are things? And I said, what on earth is that? And he said, that's a ship going by. That's the Mississippi River right behind that dike there, that levee. And I said, the Mississippi River is behind that wall? And he said, yeah. And then it dawned on me, I said, oh my God, we are standing below the river level. And he said, yeah. I said, how far below the river? And he said, 20 feet. 20 feet, that's two stories. This man's house is two stories below sea level. And there are ships going by. And then he explained to me about hurricanes in Lake Pontchartrain, which was off behind us, and how they were expecting a big hurricane to come through here, hit Lake Pontchartrain, break the levees, and flood the city and kill 50,000 people. Now, when it actually happened with Hurricane Katrina, it only killed 1,000 people. Not 50, just one. But they were prepared for 50,000. Furthermore, he said that the water would be 5 stories deep, 50 feet deep in downtown Louisiana, downtown New Orleans. As it turned out, it wasn't that deep. It was only 12 or 15 or 20 feet deep, I think, in the deepest places. But they were expecting something even worse than actually did occur. Now, for a Plains kid, I looked at that and I said, there's no way in hell that I would live in a place like this. I wouldn't live in New Orleans. But you know, the people that are born there, live there, grew up there, went to school there, work there, live there, and expect to die there, they don't see anything unusual about that. People who live in Omaha, Nebraska, at the SAC Air Force Base there, they don't see any problem living in Omaha, Nebraska, knowing that the Strategic Air Command is headquartered there, and that it is, without a doubt, the number one target on the Russian missile launch program. They don't see anything about it, and that's because nobody actually believes that nuclear war is coming any more than anybody in Baghdad actually believed in the final analysis the United States would attack Iraq, any more than anybody in Iran or in America today, honest to God, believes that the United States is about to attack Iran and Syria. We know that it's a possibility. We know that it's a preparation that's going on around us. We can see the Air Force base in Omaha, Nebraska, but there isn't anybody there that, honest to God, believes that a nuclear weapon is actually going to be detonated there. And that's the sum and substance of why it is that there are so many disasters that kill so many people, because in the final analysis, nobody is ever prepared for what is so obvious that is going to occur. I got to give you a reminder here, and we'll be back with more on the subject of strategic relocation when we come back. You're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet, and if you'd like more information about the law school and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. The law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, go to our homeschooling page on the website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated every week. It has our radio log schedule and archives, and that can be accessed through the website. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest, and the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events 7 days a week. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order one for yourself. The number to call, 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and editorial review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. We often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners, and these endorsements or recommendations that we give don't mean that those authors and publications that we endorse and recommend are necessarily going to reciprocate. And that's because most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour are political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint is not necessarily totally endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review. These opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone, and they do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, management, or staff of this network or local radio station. If you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. A couple of reminders here, that is, we're conducting a health class in the new school here that we're going to launch that deals with health. We're offering a new class on health and healing, which covers the alternative health methods being used for treatment and healing of such things as degenerative diseases like cancer or muscular dystrophy, multiple sclerosis, and so on, that affect about half of Americans, or will in their lifetimes, and how to prevent these degenerative diseases, and to use the application of essential oils and super nutritional foods containing more nutrients and fewer calories. The class also includes hands-on teaching, paperwork, allergic reaction testing and training so you can do it at home, acupressure application and training so you can find pressure points, and much, much more. The class is February 5th through the 9th here at the law school. It's a five-day school, February 5th through the 9th here in Isabella, Missouri. If you're interested then, give our school a call. The number to call, 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Instructor is a 28-year cancer survivor. All right, back to strategic relocation. This is a 1 in 100 book. I'm going to recommend it, and then I'm going to read a few excerpts from it as we progress along. It's written by Joel M. Skousen, S-K-O-U-S-E-N. I've never read another book like it. I have published a book similar to it. And many of the principles that we see here are the points and the historical facts and so on that he relates here, we relate in our subsistence and survival school. But he's got some things in here that I was really surprised at. I mean, really detailed information about where you live in the United States, Canada, or Australia. And here in the United States, Canada, or Mexico. Not you Aussies down there. I don't know what's going on down in Australia, per se, but here in North America. And this fellow, who lives in Utah, has a unique occupation, or a unique business. He designs safe strategic relocation compounds for people like Ted Kennedy or George Bush or anybody else for that matter that has money. In a phase one or a part one, part two, and part three, or a plan A, B, and C, you may be living in downtown San Diego, California. And you don't want to get caught there in San Diego, California, in a nuclear attack. And so you might call Mr. Skousen and say, well, gee, I need to have a place that I can relocate to where I can operate my business and not have the exposure to the potential of a nuclear attack in San Diego, California. Now, for you people living out there in San Diego, you're all sitting there going to work or doing whatever you're doing. You do not believe for a moment that San Diego is going to be attacked by a nuclear weapon. But there are people who actually believe that's going to occur. And they're not prepared for if, they're prepared for when. And they've already got their preparations in place. And people that already have a safe place in place, bought and paid for, are people who, honest to God, believe that it is a very real threat. And they have spent their money and they have taken action to alleviate that threat. Now, in some cases, when we talk about relocation, it means, well, why don't you, if you thought that San Diego was a nuclear threat target or a nuclear target, why don't you move out of San Diego? And that's precisely what Skousen recommends. Then he goes to the next step and he says, well, in some cases, maybe you can't leave San Diego. Maybe for some reason you need to be there. Well, then could you relocate yourself somewhere else in San Diego County, which would be a safer location for you to be in when the bomb is dropped on the shipyards and on the bases down there? And then could you live in the next county over? And then when this event transpires, what kind of chaos, what kind of problems are going to ensue? And then where could you retreat to from San Diego County? And then where could you go from there to a plan C in the event that that place is still too close to San Diego? It's plan A, plan B, and plan C. People with lots of money do things like this, just like President Bush. And he didn't plan this. I mean, somebody in the Pentagon or somebody, you know, in the Army or the Air Force or somebody somewhere started planning this. This isn't something that came about, by the way, in the Bush years. This is something that goes back 30 years. Hell, they were preparing and planning for this back in the Eisenhower years. Now, of course, people will look at it today and say, well, you know, they didn't drop a bomb in the 60s, and they didn't drop a bomb in the 70s, and they didn't drop one in the 80s, and so therefore it probably is never going to happen. And so therefore, you know, people were building bomb shelters in the 1950s in the Los Angeles Basin, and of course, now we don't do that anymore. No, that's true, we don't. Now, I read to you a little story here about the ice storm, and I got to share with you one more kind of a piece or an anomaly of human nature, and that is, do you believe that this is the only ice storm that's ever hit the Ozarks, and it's probably the last one, and it's never going to happen again? Well, boys and girls, I was here in 87, and I went through that ice storm, and we survived it, and I prepared for this ice storm, and I did it after the 87 ice storm. And I said, when I was out of power here for a week, I said, that isn't going to happen to me again. And it didn't, and I'm prepared. And I got through this ice storm with a whole lot less of the dislocation than the other 71% of the people whose power was knocked out. The same thing is true with hurricanes, and the same thing is true with tidal waves and tsunamis and all these natural disasters or man-made disasters like war or economic collapse or depressions and so on. People who are prepared for it live through them better than people that aren't prepared. And most people, you know, if you're a truck driver or a waitress or your housewife, you're sitting there saying, yeah, but I don't have millions of dollars to do this with. And I'm here to tell you it doesn't take millions of dollars to do this with. Every single one of us in America can be just as prepared as the people of China or the people of Russia. Now, if Russians and Chinese can be prepared for nuclear war, I think Americans, Canadians, and Mexicans can be prepared for nuclear war. They're a lot poorer than we are. And somebody's going to say, yeah, but it's their government that's doing it for them. Well, hell, we had our government doing it for us in New Orleans with FEMA, didn't we? Didn't we learn that the government can't do anything for us, that we can't do better for ourselves, after watching what happened in New Orleans and the Gulf Coast? I don't buy into the idea that government's going to do anything for me and that they're going to do something for me that's better and cheaper than I can do for myself. And I'm not rich and I'm not famous and I'm not a Bill Gates or a Warren Buffett any more than you are. But hey, listen, I'm not living in San Diego, California or Washington, D.C. or New Orleans. And I'm not living here in the Ozarks by accident. I'm living here by design. And one of the things that I thought was so unusual about this book called Strategic Relocation, North American Guide to Safe Places, is that at the end of the book, about the last 50 or 75 pages, there's a section in here on analysis of U.S. counties and states. An analysis of every county in the United States and every state in the United States, provinces, and islands like Hawaii and Puerto Rico and the Caribbean and so on, a threat analysis. Remember, this guy makes his living. He advises people like Bill Gates and Warren Buffett and George Bush on where to locate, what to build, how much it's going to cost. And he says here in his introduction, he says, you know, I work for people of modest means, and I work for the filthy rich. And depending upon how much money you have, and you don't have to have $30 billion to move out of San Diego, which is a high-risk nuclear bomb site, to move to another location out of harm's way. That just does not cost $1 billion. Now, it can cost a lot of money to build a facility in San Diego County to survive a nuclear attack, but it doesn't cost very much to get the hell out of San Diego County. And he points that out. He says, you know, it just makes more sense to get out of New Orleans than it does to prepare for a hurricane in New Orleans. But, you know, if you want to survive a hurricane in New Orleans, there's a lot of people that did that. There are places in New Orleans that didn't get flooded. And wouldn't you be better served to live in that neighborhood for the next hurricane? And I say the next one because New Orleans has been hit by hurricanes before. Just not this bad. And these events are cyclical. They occur, and they occur over again, just like ice storms. We had one here in 87. We had one in 07. And we're going to have another one at some point in the future. The other day, the Attorney General here really castigated and warned us. I mean, they came on the news, and they said, there's somebody that is bringing generators in here and selling them for $1,200 a piece. And he's a scam artist, and he's a dirty, low-down, no good, and you don't want to buy from him, and we're investigating him for profiteering. And I saw that, and I said, oh, my God. Look at this. We've got a dirty, rotten, low-down, no good, thieving profiteer who's bringing generators in here and selling them for $1,200. Now, the other day I was watching the news, and I was watching the 6 o'clock news here, and they were selling generators down at Home Depot, and they sold out for $1,200 each. And the next day, they had a line of people with holding numbers, and they interviewed the guy with number 50, and he said, better to be the guy with number 50 standing in line than the guy who's got number 138. And that was the last number they just issued, was number 138. Now, here's 138 customers standing in the Home Depot, and they want to buy a generator. And these generators cost $1,200. And Home Depot is bringing generators in from all over America by the truckload into this region, and they're selling them for $1,200. And here's some little entrepreneur, I don't know who this guy is, some dirty, low-down, no-good profiteer. And he went out someplace, and he bought some generators. Hell, maybe he hadn't given them to him. Maybe he got those generators for $0, never paid a dime. I don't know. And he came into the area, and he's selling generators for $1,200. Not $12,000, just $1,200, same price as the Home Depot generator. I don't know if they're as good as or better than, or I can't tell you. All I know is he's selling generators. Now, the Attorney General is investigating that guy. And I can't sit here and let that pass and say, how come he's not investigating Home Depot? Why is it that a major multinational corporation like Home Depot can sell generators for $1,200 in a disaster area? But if Joe Sixpack goes out and buys some generators and comes in here and sells those same generators, that's profiteering. That's criminal. The hell's the difference? I couldn't figure it out. And so the other day I saw a movie here. It was called Freedom to Fascism. It was put out by a fellow by the name of Aaron Russo. It talks about American politics, and it talks about the IRS, and it talks about multinational corporations and the Federal Reserve System and a whole plethora of problems and circumstances and businesses, you know, and business practices and so on. And he brought up some of those very same questions. And it seems to be all right for Bank of America to charge 30% interest on a credit card, but if a mafia loan shark charges 30%, well, he's a dirty criminal. It's all right for Pfizer and Merck and these other companies over here to sell drugs, but if Joe Sixpack goes down here and he's selling drugs on the street corner, well, that's terrible. Then they point out that when you're taking drugs from Joe Sixpack down on the corner, why, Joe, he kills 6,000 people a year selling these dirty, tainted, illegal drugs. They don't tell you that the major drug companies kill 130,000 people, 21 times more people, with legal drugs out of Osco, Buttery, and Rexall, for crying out loud. They don't tell you that. Hell, you're safer ingesting dirty cocaine from Joe Sixpack down on the street than you are taking drugs from your doctor through the drugstore. Your chances of dying are 21 times greater taking legal, honest, prescribed drugs from the drugstore. 21 times greater than taking cocaine or heroin from some guy on the street corner. I'm just reporting facts. I don't get into the morality of drugs and drug dealing, one thing and another. I'm not here advocating drug dealing. I'm just making an observation, making a report to you. If you're concerned about the number of people dying, you ought to be more concerned about your doctor and Merck and Pfizer than you are about some drug dealer down here in the Medellin cartel, because he ain't killing anywhere near that many. Now, getting back here to the Home Depot and the Joe Sixpack generators over here, so I can circle that one off over here now that I've reported it to you over here, we've got a mindset here in America that if Bank of America, Citicorp, and Home Depot are engaged in some business practice, that's okay. But if George Gordon or Joe Sixpack or somebody else is engaged in the same business over here, that isn't okay. That's bad, wicked, terrible, awful, and evil. It's all right for George Bush to have a nuclear bomb blast shelter and fallout facility furnished at taxpayer expense. It's okay for him to be warned about a nuclear bomb potential and the dangers that it poses to him and his family and his business associates. But the average Joe Sixpack on the streets of America, he shouldn't know about that, and he shouldn't have one of those. And I think that's hypocritical. I think that's hypocrisy to an extreme. So I just thought I would report that to you. And I'm going to report to you that you can have the same protection that George Bush has for billions of dollars of taxpayer money. You can have the same thing for a few thousand dollars of your own money. Doesn't cost billions, just cost a few thousand. And I'm going to report the names, the dates, times, places, facts, witnesses, and evidence to support that. Because I think that every American ought to have the same opportunity as the elitists. Now, I'm not here, you know, to sell bomb shelters in San Diego. I don't care what you people do. But it would just make sense to me that if I was going to get on a ship and I was going to ship out from here to there, that I would know where the life belts and the life jackets are located. You know, in case the ship hits an iceberg on its way up from Seattle to Anchorage or Haines, and maybe I might have to get in the water, and maybe, you know, where are the lifeboats? And which lifeboat is assigned to me? And how do I get off this ship, you know, in the event that there is an emergency? Just my common sense tells me that. And after I saw that tsunami over there in Indonesia and Thailand here a couple of years ago, I was just as dumb as anybody else. But now that I've seen that and I've been warned about that, I would say, So the next time that I'm on the seashore and I see the water recede out, I'm going to run for high ground. I'm going to run like hell. Because now I know that before the tidal wave hits the beach, that the water runs out. I didn't know that before. But I think everybody ought to know that, just in case. You know, you're there at the beach, and about 5, 10, 15 minutes before the tidal wave comes ashore, the water right there at the shoreline is going to recede out for about a half a mile to a mile. And instead of running out there picking up, you know, all of the fish that are left stranded and the starfish and so on, that's going to be my signal that says, boy, you better be running as fast as you can. Because here it comes. In about 10 minutes. Now, you wouldn't know that unless somebody told you. And so I thought, well, I'm going to get on the air here and I'm going to tell people about the impending war coming with Iran. You know, not that I'm some great seer or prophet. I'm not Ezekiel or Jeremiah or Isaiah. I don't have any straight line, you know, with God or with some prime minister or somebody in high places in Russia or China or someplace, or in Washington, D.C., for that matter. I'm just reading the papers. As old Will Rogers used to say, all I know is what I read in the papers. And what I read in the papers tells me that we're going to war. I don't think that's good, but then, you know, I don't make the policies, and I'm not here to tell you that I'm going to go to Washington or I'm going to call George on the phone here tonight and tell him, no, don't do that. Nobody's going to listen to me anyway. Now, I reported to you on the Springfield ice storm. There wasn't anybody here any better prepared for this ice storm in 2007 than they were in 1987, and I don't know of anybody other than George Gordon who learned anything from the 1987 ice storm. Now, I'm sure that there were a handful or a dozen or two dozen or five dozen people just like me that said, hey, listen, next time this happens, I'm going to have a generator. Now, I didn't go out and spend $1,200 on a generator. I went out and spent $400 on a generator, and I did it 20 years ago. And I'm sure that people that are spending $1,200 buying generators down here at Home Depot are probably paying more for that generator today. Generators that are being trucked in from all over the United States to this emergency area are paying more for those generators than they would have paid 3 weeks ago. Or 3 years ago, or 3 months ago. That's what happened. But right now, there is a terrible run on generators. And the power is off for a week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, or 4 weeks in a lot of places. And those people are going to need those generators. Now, I would like to learn from the mistakes of the past. And so, I'm not going to move to New Orleans. New Orleans is not one of those locations in the strategic relocation book written by Joel Skousen that says this is the ideal place for you to live. In fact, I don't think you're going to find New Orleans Parish or Orleans Parish in the book. And if you do, I think he's going to say that and tell you that that's a place that you need to get away from. Now, let me tell you where you can get a copy of the book. It's copyrighted by Joel M. Skousen back in 1998, so the book is nearly 10 years old. Been around for a while. All rights reserved. You can contact the author at 290 West 580 South, Orem, Utah, 84058. He had a telephone number back in those days. It was 801-224-4746. Again, that's 801-224-4746. And you can email Jay Skousen. It's email jskousen@enol.com. That's jskousen@enol.com. Now, this is 1998. This book may not be in print. We may have a problem getting this book into your hands. But it was given to me, and I'm going to report on it. And I'm going to show you that there are a lot of things that you can do individually, just personally, just you and your family. And if you don't have a family, just you. To protect yourself from a whole host and plethora of threats, from nuclear bomb war, to a hurricane, to a tsunami, to any other natural disaster, tornadoes, hurricanes, etc., that may affect you in your location. And in fact, this particular source is so detailed that it goes county by county. Hey, I'm about out of time. I'm going to give you a reminder here that you have been listening to The Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide, over the Internet. And if you'd like more information about the law school and the Law Hour, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org. Now, the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, then please go to our homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. And the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Our time's up, and we got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, talking about strategic relocation. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.